Radio Network. Eric Harley here. Gary McNamara's off for one more day. We're together tomorrow, and then I'm out for the big Walcott Truckers Jamboree. And I'll be there Thursday and Friday at the Walcott Iowa 80 Truck Stop in Walcott, Iowa. So come on out and see us Thursday and Friday. And Marty Stewart on stage Thursday night. It's going to be great. This is Ask the Law for Monday, July 11, 2011. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here, a service of Old Blue USA. We need you to know that information and answers to questions are up to date as of today and can change without notice. Comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. AskTheLaw.org is the website. Click on that big red button that says Email Ask the Law. You have to scroll down, but you'll see the big red button, and you can submit your CMV questions anytime. We want you to submit them by phone right now at 800-288-9227. We got a lot on the table. The program with Mexico and cross-border trucking is open again. We'll talk more about that coming up. And coming up, a story from eTrucker.com about the FMCSA wanting to release driver safety data. They're seeking the authority to release this driver data, and from what this story tells us from eTrucker.com, OverDriveOnline.com, they may be wanting to rank drivers now in a percentile, something they said originally they wouldn't be doing. We'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. Let's right now get to David. David is in Warren, Michigan, and has a question. Good morning, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Good. Welcome.
Good. I have a question. I work for a U.S.-based carrier, and I go into Canada, and I've been told by our law department that we cannot use the Canadian rules hours of service when in Canada because we're U.S.-based. Is that true?
Okay.
All right. Now we got the answer. The answer is
yes, you can use the Canadian hours of service.
That is not true, what they have been telling
Correct.
Me, apparently.
Okay. Now, here's where the problem occurs, David. There is an interpretation in the regulations that any time 7 days before or 7 days after you make an interstate trip, you're going to be subject to the regulations, the hours of service during that whole period of time. So if this is one of those situations where you say you cross into Canada today and you're only there for 3-4 days, and then you turn around and come back, what they can do is they can make sure that you comply with the hours of service the whole time that you're there.
So basically, while you're there, now, do we know about Canadian hours of service and how they account for them, how many days they go back? So basically, I guess the question I'm asking is when he gets back into the States after being in Canada for a few days, what he did in Canada is going to be measured under the U.S.
Yes.
hours of service.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that the same would be true for Canada. However, I don't know. What does he need to know?
What they have to do is when a Canadian driver gets ready to come into the United States, at the point that he crosses the border, he has to be in compliance with the U.S. hours of service. Likewise, a driver from United States goes into Canada. Obviously, the Canadian hours are more lenient than they are from the U.S. He can go up there. He can operate under the Canadian hours. But what he has to do is he has to make sure that when he comes back into the United States, at the time that he crosses, he is in compliance as far as on the road.
Okay, so now let's assume that David goes in there, and I don't know what their hours of service says in Canada about, let's say, completely the total day of on-duty time. But if it's, let's say it's more, and the total...
They have the same hours on duty, but you get 13 hours of drive time instead of 11.
Okay. Right. Okay, so let's say the drive time he spends and he does 13 hours
in Canada. And I think this is what we're getting at, David, with your what you're being told. So let's say he goes up there, and on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, he's in Canada. He's doing 13 hours each day, and then comes back into the States. He's going to be out of compliance, is he not?
Correct. Even though the actual hours that you drove were in Canada, the fact is the United States says, you know, anytime you go somewhere else and you come back at roadside, we're going to treat you how you are.
Yeah, those whatever you did on that log, you've basically done it as if you did it in the United States.
Well, no. What we mean is when he comes back into the United States, a trooper or a DOT inspector in the United States cannot go back and penalize him for driving the 13 hours. Because at the time he crossed back into the United States, what happened on the road, it's already water under the bridge. But when a compliance officer goes in and does the compliance review,
okay,
that's where they're going to go back and slap the company, because they let you operate beyond the hours of what a motor carrier inside the United States is entitled to.
So they're going to walk in during the compliance review of the office and say, okay, now we're going to look back here.
Yes.
And this is where it comes in. That's probably what they're getting at, David, I'm assuming, and you'd have to talk with them about it, is that if it is more lenient in Canada, you still want to abide by the rules that we have in the States, so that if there is a compliance review, they don't have any write-ups.
Correct.
Okay, so it's for the compliance officer, not the DOT officer.
Right. So, like I say, at the time you get stopped on the road, they're going to look at, are you in compliance at the time you get stopped?
Yeah.
If you did something yesterday, and you did something the day before that, and something the day before that, and you're still operate, you know, you had the 10 hours off at the time that you were stopped, you had your 10 hours off, you're not driving more than 11 hours, you're not on duty more than 14 hours, and you're not more than 60 hours and 7 days or 70 hours and 8 days,
yeah,
then you are in compliance
at that
roadside
time. Okay.
But when the DOT officer or the state partner comes in and does the compliance review,
yeah,
they're going to look beyond, you know, the actual scope that the roadside trooper can look at,
right,
and that's where they're going to go the 7 days before or the seven days after,
right,
and that driver better be in compliance with the United States hours of service.
On the flip side of that coin, if David goes into Canada and he comes back, he's there for 3 days, and he comes back on Thursday, and he's been driving for more than 11 hours because the law allows it in Canada, when he hits the United States, even at roadside at that point, he could be hit or not?
No. If he's in compliance when he comes back into the United States, he's
right.
In compliance. He's not. He had his 10 hours off. He hasn't driven.
No, but I'm saying, let's say he's driven past the 11 hours in Canada.
It doesn't make any difference.
Then comes across.
No, it doesn't make,
any difference.
Because what they're going to do is, at the time he gets stopped,
mm-hmm,
they're going to treat him as an American driver on American soil. What he did yesterday, even though he drove 13 hours yesterday,
yeah,
if he has 10 hours off...
If he drives 13 hours today, let's say it's towards the end of his driving time today...
He crosses the border.
And then he crosses the border. He's beyond that.
That would be illegal.
Then he's going to be illegal roadside.
And correct.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of the danger of getting tagged roadside.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That would be, if he was tagged at roadside, would be if he started in Canada,
yeah,
and his 13th hour put him in the United States,
right,
he's in trouble there.
Right. So I, if your carrier, as a matter of policy, and by the way, we've said this countless times on this program over the years, David, if your carrier, as a matter of policy, is asking you to do something It's likely that they want you to, you know, fit within that policy that can be more stringent even than the hours of service and regulatory rules here in the United States. They can't obviously be less stringent than the rules, because the law at that point would supersede. But in this case, it sounds like what they're trying to do is make sure that you're just not getting too many drive hours in that day, and whether compliance or at the end of a driving long driving day in Canada entering the U.S., you're not tagged roadside.
And see, that's where a Canadian company has an advantage over an American company, because once that Canadian driver gets back into Canada,
he can
automatically flip over and run under the Canadian rules.
Right.
The only thing is, when he crosses into the United States, at the time he crosses, he has to be in compliance with the U.S. hours.
Right.
He operates under the U.S. hours while he's in the United States, but the minute he gets back into Canada, he can drop back and run under the Canadian rules without any penalty.
Do they do compliance reviews for companies from Canada and I guess now Mexico?
Sure.
Does the U.S. do those compliance reviews?
Yes. And the Canadian companies and the Canadian people will send them down here to do the compliance review on American company that runs in Canada.
Wow, that is interesting. Wow. Well, David, if it sounds like to me, and you might want to talk to somebody there with your carrier, but sounds like to me that they're probably on the right track and that they want you to stay with the U.S. hours of service rule as a matter of policy to make sure that you don't go beyond that driving time.
Yeah, and the other thing I heard for CSA, whatever happens in Canada stays in Canada. It does not apply to CSA.
Are they reporting that internationally?
No,
they are not.
They are not reporting.
No. Nope.
Okay, so if there's a roadside inspection, something's noted in Canada, as of yet, we're not doing any cross-border reporting.
Canada and the U.S. are not talking back and forth to each other.
Yeah. All right.
But
thank you, gentlemen. Have a good morning.
Hold on, David. We have a but to that answer.
But a Canadian driver
that
gets stopped in the United States,
right,
the United States will build a file on him.
Ah, okay. Yeah, we're watching you, Canadians. All right, David, thank you so much. We do appreciate it. Stay safe. All right, back in a moment. If you want to get in, Tony and others have questions, and Trooper Dial is here to answer those questions. We call it Ask the Law. It's absolutely free, no extra charge for this. Get in right now at 800-288-9227. This is the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Eric Harley here. Ask the Law. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial answering your questions at 800-288-9227. Information and answers to questions can change without notice, are up to date as of today, Monday, July 11th, 2011. And comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. Here we go. Back to your calls. We'll go to Tony is next. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hey, good morning.
Welcome.
Yeah, I got the electronic log, and I was wondering if it's legal for my company to change the logs to whatever they want, because I've been noticing they do that like several times a week.
Be more specific. What do you mean changing them to whatever you
want? What are they changing?
Well, I type in what, like if I'm going to drive, I type in that I'm going to line 3 or whatever. Well, just for instance, one time I pulled into a truck stop, I parked, I went to line 2, and then a couple hours while I was in the sleeper, they sent a message on my Qualcomm saying, yeah, we're putting you on line 3.
Why would they put you on line 3 if you're parked?
I don't know. They just do weird stuff like that. And, I mean, we have to send in another message and tell them that it needs to be changed, but that's not always easy. Sometimes they argue with us, stuff like that.
Let me ask you this. A lot of the electronic devices are GPS tracked.
Yeah, ours is.
And so it could
connected.
It could be, and depending upon how they've got the sensitivity set, some of them You have to move more than, you know, more than 100 feet, more than 200 feet, more than 300 feet, you know, so on and so forth, you know, for it to register that the vehicle has moved. And it,
yeah.
And some of them, you know, they're putting the screws down, and they're finding that if you went into one truck stop and say you parked at it, then the next thing you know, you're across the highway at another truck stop, you know, paper log, yeah, you could just sit there and leave that on line three. But with the GPS system, all of a sudden you're at one location, and the next time it checks the location, what we call pinging, you're at a different location, then the company's going to go back and say, well, what happened here? You know, how did you get from this location to this location?
The truck moved.
Right. The truck moved.
Yeah. Stand by, Tony. We're going to put you on hold and get back to you in just a few minutes. We have to go to a break right now, so we're going to put you on hold. And by the way, if you want to get in too right now, ask the law at 800-288-9227. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Eric Harley here. Ask the Law. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here answering your questions. You have a question about hours of service. You have a question about CSA. Now is the time to get it in. All the information and answers to questions are up to date as of today, July 11, 2011. Can change without notice. And comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinion only. AskTheLaw.org is the website to submit your CMV questions. And let's go back to Tony. All right, Tony, I guess the point that Trooper Dial is making, I'll let him finish here, is that it's possible that essentially the GPS system that they're using on your truck is not catching up as quickly, so that...
Well, what happens a lot of times is the GPS will get out of contact with the satellite, and it just... does
a
false log that way.
Yeah. Well, in that case, Trooper Dial, their records are going to have to pretty much coincide with what the GPS data is saying in case of any kind of compliance review. Is that right?
Well, here again, like you and I were talking during the break. Right now, FMCSA has not set a standard for EOBRs. Companies are going out there and buying something. A manufacturer is building something without having knowledge of what FMCSA is going to propose.
Right.
Hopefully, now that we have an NPRM for EOVRs, once that goes through the process and comes and gets to a final rule, now then FMCSA will spell out exactly what has to transpire through the use of an EOBR. Up until then, if a company such as the one Tony has, you know, they hope that the system they have will be the system that FMCSA mandates once the EOBR final rule comes to pass. If it's not, then the company Tony's working for, if their system doesn't match what FMCSA proposes, then they have to scrap that system and go out and buy another system.
Right, right.
So right now, without the manufacturers knowing for sure, they're all taking a chance and gambling that their system is going to be the right one, you're going to have these situations where Tony's in, he parks the truck, and it may be 15 minutes before the actual pinging catches up with it, and his company is saying, well, wait a minute, you know, you're showing 9 minutes or 14 minutes and 30 seconds ago you actually parked the truck, but we've got one location at this last one, we've got a different location. So now then you've got to go back and change it to where it will show that you were driving up to the last location in this location that the satellite was talking back and forth to each other.
Right. So it sounds like some kind of data lapse going on, Tony, because we were trying to do, you know, you always go to the worst case scenario. Wow, would a carrier be trying to get away with something? Or, you know, because it looks fairly suspicious.
It certainly brings up a lot of questions.
Yeah. And that's what it sounds like.
I think it's pretty much automated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably what's going on, is that the data from the GPS just hasn't caught up with what the truck is actually doing yet. And so it's
I was just wondering about the legality of all that.
And here again, it's a deal that the company is wanting to cover their behind, so that if DOT or their state partner come in to do an audit and they pull the EOBRs, actually, you know, you're going to have an actual log that's going to be printed out, you know, that's going to look like an actual log sheet. But then they're going to want to say, okay, let me see your GPS tracking.
Mm-hmm.
And the company wants to make sure that the GPS tracking matches the log that's printed out that they're going to get the driver to sign and hand to them when they do the audit.
Well, and now, and we're thinking in terms of compliance review, but imagine that an officer comes up roadside or at a truck stop or something and knocks on the window, and that data has not yet caught up with the truck.
All he's going to do is if at roadside, he's going to have the driver go back and manipulate, scroll backwards,
okay,
to see what what the driver has entered,
right,
on the actual the EOBR.
Yeah, all the messages I put in.
Right.
But
okay,
what they're looking at is on the compliance side, is they're going to have the actual log, plus they're going to have the actual GPS tracking, and they're going to compare those two, and if they don't match, then all of a sudden the company now is going to be up for a false log.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Tony, hopefully we've answered your questions, and thank you so much for the call at 800-288-9227. And then there is this. This story came out just the other day at overdriveonline.com. And basically the gist of the story is that the FMCSA wants to release driver safety data and make it public. Now, the concern has been, and Todd Dills wrote the article for overdriveonline.com, is that the FMCSA has been saying that drivers would not be ranked. But according to this story, they are looking for authority. The FMCSA is asking for authority to make the driver safety data public, and then possibly rank it in some kind of percentile against other drivers. Is there any, and I understand under the former leader, John Hill, you know, he had said, in fact, he's made the comment recently as a result of this story, that it looks like, this is something that really the FMCSA wanted to do long term, and we had also heard that CSA was going to be changing. I mean, as we go along here, there were going to be updates made and everything else. In this ranking type situation, if they were ranked publicly and ranked put in a percentile ranking against other drivers, is there anything that a driver, I guess they would still be able to contest anything that came up? Right.
Well, first off, what we've got to do is we've got to go back and look at what is the current final rule,
mm-hmm,
for CSA.
Right.
As of yet, FMCSA or their state partner cannot go in and do compliance reviews based on the CSA data.
Okay.
Because we have not gotten a final rule on that yet.
All right.
You know, right now, all the data is used to rank a carrier in one of the seven basics.
Right.
they can start the intervention process,
right?
Which means that they can send a letter to a motor carrier, and the interventions can identify a driver, or it can identify one of the seven basics that the motor carrier needs to take some special attention and correct it.
Hmm.
We still do not have a final rule that says that FMCSA can go in and do a compliance review on the motor carrier
right.
yet. We still have to use the old system to generate the compliance review, a complaint,
yeah.
or if the motor carrier is has enough things wrong, but we cannot use one of the seven basics to generate a compliance review. Hopefully that's in the next process, which as of yet they have not issued an NPRM.
Yeah, so this new move for authorization to make the public driver data public could be part of preparing for some kind of NPRM?
Yes.
Okay.
They're going to have to present an NPRM that says, "Okay, now then we want to take the CSA data
mm-hmm.
and we want to take and make a driver safety management system
right.
available to
right.
the public."
Right. Okay. All right.
So they would have to spell it out what they want to do in an NPRM. Open it up for comments, close it, review it, and then bring forth a final rule.
All right, we're back in a moment on Ask the Law right here on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network at Ask the Law. Eric Harley, Senior Trooper Monty Dial, retired of the Texas Highway Patrol, courtesy of Old Blue USA. All the information and answers to questions are up to date. As of July 11, 2011, can change without notice. Let's get one more question in, if we can. Kevin in Little Rock. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I was up in Massachusetts, Watertown, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on paper log, and I stopped at the last service plaza on the pike there. I was 12 miles from my destination, so I showed Watertown, logging off duty. I got up from my rest. I showed Watertown to Watertown, 30 minutes, local driving. I was at my destination, and he told me I falsified my log.
Hmm.
So I'm just wondering, I'm 12 miles from my destination. Can I show local driving Watertown to Watertown?
Well, the...
These are the hard questions because it's without being there roadside as this was happening and actually looking at the log, it's tough to answer. But
I was at my delivery point and showed him my log, and he said, "How could you have left Watertown and arrived at Watertown?" I said, "It was local driving." I said, "I was 12 miles from here on my rest. So I just showed local driving, you know."
Oh. Well, it doesn't make any difference if you did local driving or not. The fact is, you pulled into Watertown, took your rest, and then you made your delivery in Watertown.
Yes, sir.
What I would have questioned, you know, going back to my experience when I was on the road, is how could, you know, the fact is, I did take it that you did actually show some driving?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
30 minutes from where I rested to my delivery destination.
What I would have questioned would have been if you had not shown any driving, and I went back and said, "Okay, where did you actually stop at? You know, where did you park to take your rest, and where was your delivery made?" In this instance right here, you were actually showing that you did some driving from the point that you rested to the point that you made delivery. In that instance right there, you were not trying to conceal any hours.
No, sir.
Where had you tried to conceal the hours by not showing any driving, and I went and found that you were at this location and your delivery was at another location and you did not show any driving, now then that is an attempt to falsify a log
yeah.
and hide the hours.
Yeah, So it sounds like it just could have been a poor judgment call, maybe.
Right. I would do is do a data queue, go back to your motor carrier, have them do a data queue to the state to show that we parked at this location, we did some driving to the location that we made our delivery, therefore there is no falsification.
Kevin, thank you. We are out of time, but get with your carrier and follow up on that data queue, and hopefully you can get that worked out. Trooper Dial will be back here in August.
Yes.
And kind of a preview of the big Great American Trucking Show.
Yes.
As well. And you will be there at GATS.
Yes.
All right.
Will be at GATS.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your July, and we will talk to you in August.
I will be here.
It's the Midnight Radio Network.